Word of
mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. There is something keenly American about riding the rails. We meet kind-hearted hobos in Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, hear the restless spirit in Woody Guthrie songs, and cheer on Chaplin's Little Tramp striking out for the Yukon. The lives of real hobos don't sound nearly so romantic, especially today when their numbers are few and rail security is fierce. Since 1900, many of those who can make their way to Britt, Iowa for the annual National Hobo Convention. Aaron Lake Smith is senior editor of Vice magazine, where he wrote about hitching his own ride to Britt and his experience there, which led him to wonder if the American hobo has reached the end of the line. Aaron Lake Smith, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You hopped your first train with a friend at 18, following a ragged, hand-drawn map, and that was the first time of many. What was it that hooked you?
Well, I guess it was dangerous, which always makes you feel alive. So, I mean, we got on the train, and you get going, and you get to see kind of the backside of this world that you're used to seeing from roads. I mean, I went through my home state of North Carolina and got to see all these cities from kind of the dirt backyards and away from the kind of the highways and civilization. So, I mean, you kind of get out there and you really just, you get to see this world, this kind of hidden, unusual world that we're not used to seeing in kind of day-to-day life where, you know, there's cell phone towers and we kind of have this way of life, this kind of constant surveillance. And I feel like, you get hooked to kind of the adrenaline rush of it almost.
There is a kind of pioneering, searching romanticism in the image, I think. And many people bought it out of necessity or maybe a wish for freedom. About a million people on the road as hobos between 1890 and 1930. 48,000 killed in 10 years, 1898 to 1908. A pretty perilous way of life, which brings us really to Britt, Iowa, offering itself as a host of the Hobo Convention in 1900. Now, why did Britt, this town, welcome people otherwise discarded as troublesome or vagrants?
Yeah, I felt like that was the most interesting part of the story, almost, in that, you know, Britt was this newly incorporated farming community, and they were kind of out looking to make a name for themselves, and where most of the other communities all across the country were saying, you know, they had vagrant laws on the books, and they were trying to kind of get rid of the hobos, kind of treating them as this undesirable element. Britt said, you know what, we need temporary farm workers, we need a population, and they basically got in touch with the hobos at that time, invited them down, had them, you know, actually brought them down in a passenger train, kind of courted them, showed them the town, said, here's, you know, we can have the space for you, this is a place where you guys can meet for forever. And, you know, do you want to come down here and just kind of make this your ancestral home? And the hobos took them up on it. And since then, it's, you know, 112 years, hobos have been coming to Britt.
Well, back in the day, I guess hobo conventions were a place where people could pass on knowledge, you know, train schedules, train lines, friendly people. What do they do now at the National Hobo Convention?
Well, now, I mean, the way I described in my piece is it's more county fair mainstream. It's just, it's not quite as rugged and outlaw as you might imagine. I mean, definitely the population's age. People are retired. They're older. People have campers now. They're coming in cars. It's an entirely kind of different vibe than you might expect from some of the earlier descriptions of the hobo conventions. The turn of the century, it was a really wild kind of raucous event. It was an event you didn't want to bring children to. And today there was, you know, there's tons of kids at the hobo convention. There's townspeople coming to kind of look at the festivities and the parade and try out mulligan stew, which is kind of the ancestral the meal of the hobo, which is just pretty much a number of vegetables and meat kind of chopped up in these big vats and cooked up and served up in these little styrofoam cups.
You know, it's funny to consider the hobo as a tourist attraction. I was reading another article about the convention on, I think it was BuzzFeed, and the author noted how many people actually fall into fires. I mean, I'm looking at photographs that you have on Vice, some hard-worn lives, you know, ragged-looking, nicotine-stained, a lot of drinking and drugs. And if we look at regular homeless figures and their statistics on drinking, drug abuse, mental illness, is it the same case for hobos? Is it a different population?
I think it is. I think, you know, the hobos, they're kind of considered, I mean, there's kind of this whole taxonomy. There's hobos, which are kind of at the top of the hierarchy, and there's tramps, and then below them are bums. And so I think, you know, the hobos they have a dignity. It's kind of a quiet dignity and a desire to work and a desire to really be part of, be respectful, be responsible. And they kind of consider themselves, you know, the good people, the good homeless almost. And so they don't kind of put themselves in that category, even though, you know, drinking and drugs, I feel like on trains and on, if you're traveling, I feel like that's just a part of the lifestyle. You have so much free time. You're kind of rambling around. I mean, you inevitably want to crack open a, you know, bottle of wine or some beer. So I feel like
or whatever.
Yeah. It's just, you have so much time and you're wandering the country. And I think that's a part of it rather than, you know, obviously addiction plays a part, but not, I don't think it's as bad as kind of traditional homeless population.
We're talking with Aaron Lake Smith. He's senior editor of Vice Magazine, where he wrote about attending the National Hobo Convention in an article called Death of the American Hobo, the National Hobo Convention Reaches the End of the Line. Not an optimistic title, Aaron. Why is the way of life coming to an end?
Well, you know, at the Hobo Convention, you mostly had senior citizens. I mean, this is a group, the people that actually call themselves hobos are sick and they're getting old and they really are. You know, most of them can't ride trains anymore. They've settled down. It's, you know, the actual title of hobo is something that I think is dying off. You have these younger populations. You have travelers. You have people like me who, you know, might do it for adventure, might do it to get a free ride or for whatever reasons. But I think it's rare that you'll find a really young person calling themselves a hobo. And it is a kind of special designation. I mean, the hobo, it was a part of American life. Like I said, you know, there's a million hobos on the rails back in the early turn of the century, and they became a part of communities. They were farm workers. They were migrant labor, and it was there was some respect. And I think today there's so few, and it's a more outsider kind of way of life that kind of dignity is fading away, and it's kind of fragmenting into a million different pieces.
Well, you're a young man yourself. You rode the rails to get there, dodging the authorities for a bit before being warned off in, I think, Wyoming. You then rented a U-Haul and picked up some hitchhikers. Now, two of those hitchhikers kind of illustrate to me the old hobo and the new hobo, Joe and Alex. Tell us a little bit about them and why they are on the road.
Right. I mean, Joe was this, you know, basically we were driving through Wyoming in our U-Haul, and we saw this guy with, you know, a 2-foot beard pushing his bicycle, which is like loaded down with, you know, 400 pounds of supplies up this hill. And so we decided to pick him up, and, you know, we were kind of feeling each other out. But once he got going with us, you know, I saw that he really was this kind of mythological American figure. I mean, he was probably 55 years old. He looked like he was going on 70, missing teeth. But, I mean, he was this kind of Paul Bunyan, Rip Van Winkle, living this life that none of us could really believe. He'd been camping out for 10 years. Mm-hmm. He was riding his bike to Arkansas to go panning for gold, talking to animals. And, you know, very, very lucid man, very cogent man, smart guy who'd been kind of living this way of life outside of the bounds of society. And, you know, and Alex was kind of his opposite, actually. You know, Alex was, you know, 29 years old, former Google employee, who was, you know, using couchsurfing.org and had kind of been traveling and hitchhiking for 2 years and, you know, very, you know, had an iPhone, very modern traveler, and was the younger generation and not quite the same level of commitment. It's more like he was doing it for an adventure and kind of fun and just enjoying his life and getting to see the country.
You read also about a tramp fest. This is an offshoot of those who, you know, look at the, I don't know, the hippie craft fair of the modern or the contemporary, rather, National Hobo Fest, and have kind of create what you call a younger, drunker, and stabbier version. Well, tell us about this new tattooed, pierced, free spirit anarchist. Are they coming up to assume the role of the hobo?
Right. I think that's kind of what I was trying to explore in the piece, because I feel like I'm familiar with this kind of, these outsider young people who are traveling and, you know, riding trains across the country. I think they are kind of the inheritors in some way of the hobo tradition, but it's different. It's not quite as unified. I think it's mostly people just, it's more of a lifestyle where, you know, you get the impression reading documents and doing research that the hobo was more of an American social movement almost. And it was, you know, they were workers. They were a union. The hobos had a union, and they were basically they were this unemployed union, and they were card carrying, and they kind of ended up building the base of a lot of, you know, progressive kind of ideas here in this country. And they were doing this, you know, traveling around, kind of carrying their ideas from place to place, and doing a lot as far as pushing the limits. And, you know, the anarchists, the more free spirits, it's a very thin divide. It's kind of hard to parse the two sides. But yeah, that group was not really enforced at the Hobo Convention. They kind of started their own offshoot, which is Tramp Fest, which is more of a secretive kind of roving hobo convention that takes place every year and is a little bit more raw. And that's why they started it, I think, was that they were kind of tired of the sanitation, that the kind of sanitized mentality that you were getting at the National Hobo Convention in Britain.
I want to thank you, Aaron, so much for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
Aaron Lake Smith, senior editor of Vice Magazine, where we found his article, Death of the American Hobo. The National Hobo Convention reaches the end of the line. You'll find a link to the article along with some great photographs and a video from the National Hobo Convention. The links are at wordofmouthradio.org. And you can, of course, post your thoughts on this and anything else you hear at our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio, or on Twitter, at Word of Mouth. Now stay with us, choosing a, let's call it a more humorous road, a New Hampshire stand-up comedian. We're getting a laugh proves to be also a fickle mistress. That's when Word of Mouth continues in just a moment.